That may be true, but I could definitely sleep naked on a mattress, I offer, and she laughs as we navigate through another sardine-packed aisle in the mammoth store. It's 1 in the afternoon, and I just moved in this morning. That took all of 2 hours. Spending my 20s in med school and as a resident gave me very little time for the acquisition of things, so most of my possessions fit in a duffel bag. I have very little. Not even sheets for a queen-size bed. Ergo, I'm spending Saturday at Bed Bath & Beyond, which is a bit like wandering through a BuzzFeed post titled, 10 Things I'll Never Use. More like 500. Wait, make that 501, because I just spotted the new number one item on the list. That, I say, as I make a beeline for a shelf of creme brulee torches. Grabbing a silvery one, I hold it up. Please say we can have a housewarming party, and you'll make creme brulee, and I can stride all proud and awesome into the kitchen, I say, puffing out my chest and deepening my voice. And I can light it with a torch, and we'll all ooh and ah at the manly fire I made when I lit up a dessert. She arches an eyebrow. A manly fire? I nod vigorously. And then you'll let the guests take turns punching me in the face for being a total douche for owning a creme brulee torch. She narrows her eyes. You actually want people to punch you? I'm deadly serious as I answer her. If I ever own a creme brulee torch, you have carte blanche to punch me, Josie. You really should. I drop the torch on the shelf and take her hand, clasping it tightly in mine. Promise me. From this day forward, promise you'll punch me if I ever own a creme brulee torch, a rotating tie rack, or more than one kind of cheese grater. This is part of our roommate pact. She grips my hand tighter, her green eyes glowing with stark seriousness. I solemnly swear to pummel you under all the aforementioned circumstances, as proof of our friendship and roommate solidarity. You're a saint, I say. Then wrap a hand around her head and tug her close for a quick kiss on her forehead. And hello, sweet, sexy scent of Josie. What is this delicious smell? Is it, oh, fuck me, cherries. My God, she smells like cherries, like the perfect summer fruit, like the naughtiest fruit. And I've got to wonder if that cherry scent is her face lotion, her shampoo, or her body wash. Body wash. My mind is adrift, and the word association begins. Because what goes with body wash but nudity? Naked woman in the shower, washing, lathering, soaping. Oh, hell. Snap the fuck out of it, Summers. I stuff those things into a far corner in the dark closet of my mind and pull back from Josie, leaving the questions unanswered. I slap on a happy, wholesome smile. Thank you for your commitment to my non-douchery endeavors. I've got your back, she says, and pats me. Then she points to a cupcake tin. She pants like a dog. Must have. Don't you have 20 of those? She nods as she grabs it from a shelf. Yes, but I need more. She spins around and her hand darts out for something else. It's an icing smoother. I need a new one. God, this aisle is like baker porn. She smiles gleefully. Baker porn. I like that, I say, then offer to hold the kitchen goods. She hands them to me, and I tuck them under my arm. When we turn the corner toward the next aisle, Josie stops at the end cap. She taps on a big silvery box. Quick, waffle maker, this is the true test of our roommate compatibility. Do you need a waffle maker? I peer at her through narrowed eyes, then slam my free hand as if I'm hitting a buzzer on a game show. And the correct answer is no. Never. That's what Sunday brunch is for. She holds up a palm and we smack hands. You win this round of the new roommate show, because who wants to buy a monstrosity for the kitchen counter to make waffles in once a year and then have no place to put it in our tiny New York apartment? Not this guy. And not this girl. Damn, we rock it living together. We soldier on through the store. On our quest for sheets, we wander through sconces. And seriously, what the fuck is a sconce? Does anyone even know what a sconce is? No, no one does because it's not a thing. Then an entire rack of high-end ice cream makers, which forces me to ask, who the hell decided we should make our own ice cream? Have people, I don't know, not heard of Talenti's, Edie's, Ben & Jerry's, or the corner ice cream shop? At the end of a maze of aisles and escalators, we arrive at the sheets. I blink and stare. Up and up and up. Josie, there are literally 500 kinds of sheets here, I say, my tone heavy. Choice is good, she says, tapping her finger on her chin as she checks out the options. I survey the rows upon rows of navy, black, white, dotted, and other manly pattern sheets, and immediately I'm overwhelmed. Why is sheet shopping so complicated? I swear, restarting a heart is easier than figuring out the proper thread count. I gesture to the mountains of Egyptian cotton. But each one says it's better than the last. What happens if I get the soft 300? Will I wonder if the 500 was the softest after all? And is bigger better? Do I need the 800? How do I decide? She grabs a packet of 400 thread count sheets and thrusts it in my arms with an authority that's downright hot. That's how you do it. Damn, woman, you just made the decision like that. I snap my fingers. You can't go wrong with white sheets, and they'll be just the right amount of soft, she says, stroking the plastic cover of the sheets. My eyes drift to her fingers, and I stare as she runs them down the cover of the sheets. My mind leapfrogs several inappropriate paces ahead to how her fingers might feel running down my abs, or if her belly is just the right amount of soft. I shake my head. Of course she's the right amount of soft. She should be soft. Women are usually soft. That's just a simple fact. I'm sold, I say, tucking the sheets under my arm with the rest of our haul and ferrying her away from the bed supplies, lest any more errant fantasies pop into my head thanks to the free association of Josie, sheets, fingers, stroking, soft skin, cherries, or any fucking other thing. As we leave this section, she stops at a giant tub of velvety pillows of all shapes and sizes. I need a pillow. I frown in confusion. For what? She grabs a royal blue pillow with sequins on the edges and clutches it to her chest. I like pillows. Are you a pillowphile? Total pillowphile. Dropping the blue one in the vat, she dips her hand in and riffles around, rooting through a sea of chocolate brown, deep purple, and rich red pillows. Some are square, some circular, some cylindrical. She finds one that's emerald green and long. Look! Her face lights up, as if she's discovered a pirate's booty. What's the pillow love all about, Josie? Hugging it tighter, she answers, Pillows are wonderful. We can nap with them, cuddle with them, put our feet on them. Also, she says, wagging a finger to draw me closer and dropping her voice to a whisper, They're boob friends. And I'm a cartoon character knocked senseless. It's as if I've been hit with a frying pan of naughty, and the dirty lobe of my brain has rattled free. Boob friends? Josie wiggles her eyebrows and backs up into the aisle next to the pillows. I follow. I'd follow her anywhere right now because she just uttered my favorite word, boobs. For the record, my second favorite word is tits. Third is breasts. She bites her lip, glances from side to side, then draws the pillow right between the valley of the goddesses on her chest. I groan, audibly, and my dick springs to attention in my jeans, the shameless fucker. Then, it's story time for Josie Hammer as she launches into a tale. Once upon a time, I had a stuffed crocodile. He was a small green creature who lived on my bed, a present from when I was younger and in the middle of a big love fest for the Lyle Lyle crocodile books. I made him talk, and I named him Lyle Lyle too. Clever. Her eyes twinkle. But what was truly clever was how in middle school I discovered Lyle Lyle's real purpose. You see, he came in quite handy for this early bloomer. When I was 12 and started getting these, she says, gesturing to those absolutely fucking magnificent globes, I started sleeping with Lyle Lyle. You slept with the stuffed crocodile, I ask, my throat as dry as my dick is hard. She nods and hugs the green pillow tighter between her breasts. Why did you sleep with him? I ask, because the answer eludes me. She shifts her weight so she's leaning a bit to the right. Because when you sleep on your side, the girls kind of fall on top of each other and smash each other. It can be a little uncomfortable. Yeah, like the tightness in my pants right now. I bet, I choke out. So Lyle got a job. I enlisted him as a boob friend. I slept with him every night, and he delivered complete and utter boob comfort. That lucky fucking inanimate animal. I want to grow up to be a stuffed crocodile. Josie's green eyes widen, then she laughs. I like you just fine as you, though. I hold up a forearm. Then consider this. Would this work as a boob friend? Hypothetically, of course. I'm pretty sure my hand would fit nicely between a pair of boobs. She swats me. If the pillow fails, I'll rap twice on the wall. Honestly, you don't even have to knock. Just come into my room, grab my hand, and slide it between the girls. My eyes drift to her 36 C's. What? I can tell from looking. It's a scientific gift of mine. What color are my eyes? Her question doesn't compute. I snap my gaze back up to her face. Green. She points to the bridge of her nose. And they're here. Seriously? You were talking about boobs. Pragmatically speaking, I had no choice but to look at the topic of conversation. She gives me an I caught you stare. I hold up my hands. This is not a Swedish fish moment. You brought it up. She lifts the green pillow and bonks me on the head with it. And your hand offer is noted. Just trying to be helpful, that's all. And I appreciate it. I'm also buying this pillow. When we reach the counter, I pay for the pillow and hand it to her. I pay for her baking goods, too. Have I ever told you I give amazing gifts? It's kind of a special talent of mine. She rolls her eyes, but as we leave, she lets go of the teasing and drops a soft kiss on my cheek. Thank you for the amazing gifts. That was very sweet of you. Later, as we spend our first night together as roommates, I'm weirdly jealous of the pillow. But a week or so after that, it's not pillows I'm jealous of. Chapter 7. From the pages of Josie's recipe book. Air-popped popcorn for nights hanging out on the couch. Ingredients. Unpopped corn kernels. 1 popcorn popper. Directions. 1. Place the kernels in the popcorn popper. 2. Put the top on. 3. Stick that baby in the microwave. 4. This is the toughest part. Gather close. Wait for it. Hit the popcorn button on the microwave. Watch it. When the microwave dings, voila. Serving suggestion. Dump the popped corn into a bowl, sprinkle with a little salt, grate a small bit of Parmesan cheese, and prepare to enjoy the hell out of a snack as you curl up on the couch and watch TV. Special instructions. Resist placing your feet on Chase's legs. Refrain from snuggling up next to him. Keep your hands out of that hair. That golden brown, slightly wavy, looks so damn soft hair. You are friends, and you like hanging out with him. It's that simple, and don't presume that friendship means you get the chance to touch his hair. Even though you really, really, really want to touch his hair. Chapter 8. 6 things I've learned about women from living with one. 1. They use a lot of toilet paper. Okay, hold on. I don't mean anything untoward. What I mean is this. It's like an epic fiesta of tissue in the bathroom. Can you pick up TP on your way home? Josie asks on the phone one evening as I'm leaving the hospital after an insane day of sprains and broken bones. We're almost out. There's half a roll, I say, because that's good for 3 days, right? Nope, I'm wrong. Chase, she chides as I head down the street, that'll be gone in a couple of hours. And I know why. The chick loves toilet paper. She's like one of those cat memes where the pussycat's paws are wrapped around the roll and she's gleefully tugging it off the holder. Josie uses it for everything. She uses it to take off her makeup. She uses it to clean up water on the bathroom sink. She uses it to dust. Yep, she wads up a chunk of TP and wipes down the shelves with it. She fucking unravels it with her little feline paws. She uses it when she blows her nose, which, incidentally, is kind of adorable since she makes a little squeak. I pop into the drugstore and grab some TP. I get her favorite kind, because it makes her happy. 2. Hair. It's pretty much everywhere. I find brown strands on the couch. I discover pink strands in the sink. And truth be told, I find Josie's hair in my own hair. Shh, don't tell her, but I use her hairbrush. I don't know why, but girls' brushes are evidently way better than combs. They're just really fucking awesome. 3. Josie really likes it when I perform manly tasks. I like it when she likes it when I do manly tasks. Sorry if that makes me not PC or whatever. I'm sure I should be defying stereotypical gender roles and knitting her a scarf or planting flowers, but I won't lie. I vastly prefer when she asks me to lift shit. A few days ago, she wanted to move the coffee table. I happily obliged, and I enjoyed the fact that she checked out my arms when I carried it. The other night, she asked me to open a pickle jar. I strutted into the kitchen, flexed my arms, and made a big show of it. Peacock, she muttered. I wiggled my eyebrows. It's really hard to sound like you're insulting me when you say that word. She rolled her eyes. Ding dong. I shrugged. Again, not insulted. Pickle jar opening show off. I tapped her nose. Bingo. You're insulted now? She pumped a fist. Excellent. I frowned. You're trying to insult me. I'm so sad, I said. Then I reached into the jar and ate a pickle. She patted my belly. Pregnant? I shuddered. Horrors. Oh, please, like that's the worst thing in the world. I gave her a sharp stare. It kind of would be. I'd rather be firing the trigger on the baby, not carrying it. Like I said, I prefer manly tasks. 4. After a long day at the hospital, which pretty much describes every day at Mercy, it's nice to have someone to come home to. And I'm not just saying that because Josie makes absolutely killer air-popped popcorn. But she does. This popcorn is delicious, and we munch on it all the way through a binge fest of Ballers, Vice Principals, and Veep on HBO. When we reach the end, I rattle the bowl, then pretend to hunt for more, sniffing the inside of it. You're like a dog, she says. The dog who licks his food dish when he finishes, just in case there's a nugget he missed. I drop my face into the red bowl and lick. She grabs it from me and sets it on the coffee table. I'm cutting you off. She puts her feet on the coffee table. Then she shifts a little and moves them on to me. I stare at her feet. Her toenails are painted sapphire blue. Her feet are little and slender. My eyes land on the top of her foot, and they nearly pop out of my head when I spy the bounty. You have really beautiful veins in your feet. She gives me the biggest side-eye glare in the world. What? I stretch forward, grab her foot, and hold it up. Look at this. It's fucking beautiful, I say, running my finger along the top. The vein there is thick and blue. I could draw so much blood from here. She blinks. Are you a vampire? No, I'm just an aficionado of all the systems in the body. You could give blood from your fucking foot. I yank it toward my mouth. She squeals, wriggling as I pretend to gnaw on her arch. You're crazy. I let go, dropping it across my thigh. What other glorious life-giving veins are you hiding? Let me see your arms. Is this some kind of doctor porn? I nod, and my eyes are surely sparkling. You have the cupcake tin and icing smoother. Hell, I saw the way you eyed that rolling pin, too. You had your fun. Let me have mine. Fine. She shrugs off a little flimsy sweater and sticks out her arm. I wrap my hand around her wrist and roam my eyes up and down her arm. This, I say, tapping a vein in her forearm. You could save countries with this limb. Are you really serious? Yes, this is a world-class vein, Josie. This is like a diamond mine. Man, if I didn't already think you were the cat's meow, just seeing your veins would seal the deal. Please tell me you're a blood donor. She nods. Of course. Want to take mine sometime? I draw a sharp breath and close my eyes. Don't get me excited. When I open my eyes, she kicks me in the belly. You're the worst. I know. She sits up and asks, what was the hardest part about being in Africa? Besides missing pizza? She smiles. Besides pizza, though I do understand that kind of empty ache. Especially for a cheese pie with mushrooms. Your favorite, she says. Absently, I rub my hand over her arm as I cycle back to the days in the Central African Republic. Obviously, the suffering that we witnessed. Of course, she says, her tone serious. That must have been so hard. It was. But on a more personal level, since I think that's what you're asking, I would say it was missing friends, I say with a sigh. I missed Max, even though he's a pain, and Wyatt, too. I miss talking to friends who aren't in medicine, just chatting about something other than work or doctor stuff. You're a social person, she says, her voice soft. I nod. Always have been. I loved your emails, though, I say, remembering how Josie kept in touch with me. She consistently sent me updates more than anyone else. I'd get excited just seeing your name in my Gmail inbox. She smiles widely. Really? I nod. Yeah. It was an amazing experience being there, but I did miss home, and getting your notes was like receiving a little piece of New York every time you wrote. Like the time you told me about the woman who ordered a cake for herself from her dogs. How when she picked it up, she said, "My dogs ordered me a cake." Josie laughs. She was adorable. She was a writer. She'd just hit a bestseller list, and she said her dogs wanted to congratulate her with a cake. What a lovable nut, and you totally went along with it. Josie juts up a shoulder. Of course. I said, Satchel and Lulu are so very proud of you. Here's the chocolate layer cake they ordered just for you. You probably made her day. Hell, that story alone made mine. What didn't help was the picture you sent along of the cake, you temptress, I say, narrowing my eyes. You missed my cake. So sweet. A smile tugs at my lips, a wistful one. I missed you, too. You did? She asks, her voice softer than usual, less teasing. Of course. You're one of my best friends. Right, totally. Same here. She clears her throat. Did you make new friends in Africa? Definitely. I became friends with some of the other doctors and nurses. Nurses? A tightness threads through her voice. I haven't heard that tone before. For a flicker of a second, it sounds almost like jealousy. But that's ridiculous. We've been friends for too long for things to change between us. A group of us became close. Camila, this hip nurse from Spain with crazy tattoos down her arms, was awesome. A Spanish nurse, covered in ink? She asks, like this is the most difficult concept or the most annoying. Yes, she was a riot, always telling funny stories about the guys back home. And a doctor from England, George, and another doc from New Zealand. His name was Dominic. And he had the perfect deadpan sense of humor. That was our crew. Did anyone have a vein fetish like you? I wiggle my eyebrows. They would have if a specimen such as yourself had been around to provide doctor porn, I say, and grab her arm again, running my finger along her vein as if I'm mesmerized. For a brief second, her breath catches. The soft, barely there hair on her arm stands on end. A strange sensation runs down my spine, as if I'm floating, which makes no sense, so I shove the idea away. I look away from her arm and meet her green eyes. There's something different in them, something I haven't seen before. I don't know what it is. I can't name it. I've been using your hairbrush, I blurt out. I'm not entirely sure why I'm confessing right now, but here, with those wide eyes staring into mine, I can't help myself. Her mouth lifts. I know. You don't mind? She leans forward and runs a hand through my hair. That strange feeling? It doubles. It triples. It multiplies exponentially. No, but I think you'd look nice with pink hair someday. 5. The smells. The other thing about living with a woman is that everything smells good. The bathroom is like an opium den of feminine delights. Most days, Josie wakes up before me and leaves right when I rise. When I enter the bathroom, it's like wandering into a lair of womanhood. I stand and inhale. Cherry scents and swirling aromas of vanilla sugar lotion and honeysuckle body wash linger in the air like a fucking delicious dirty dream. Every morning, I'm enrobed in the scent of woman. It's sweet and seductive and intoxicating, and it smells like her. In short, it's the fucking perfect environment for a shower jerk. What? Do you blame me? I wake up with wood, and I'm alone under a hot stream. Of course I do some morning handiwork. 6. That's the other thing about living with a woman that a man just has to battle. Something he can't avoid. Morning wood. Waking up with a hard-on is a fact of having a Y chromosome. Most of the time, Josie's gone before I even leave for work, so who cares? But every now and then, she's not, like on Saturday morning. Clad only in black boxer briefs, I pad out of my room, rubbing my eyes and yawning. There she is in the hallway, wearing the most adorable little pair of pink boy shorts that do nothing to reduce the tent in my pants. In fact, the view of her soft thighs and the swell of her tits under that flimsy t-shirt material enhances the outline in my shorts to completely fucking obvious levels. Because she's not wearing a bra. I'm not a religious man, but I'm seriously considering taking up praying to her chest. I think this is what heaven looks like, those globes. God help me, I'm seeing an angel in front of me. Morning, Chase. Morning, Josie, I say, my voice gravelly from the hour and the view. Her eyes drift down, and she blinks. My gaze follows hers, and my dick is pointing at her, like a happy billboard. She doesn't seem fazed. I shrug. I meant, it's a very good morning indeed. Josie smirks, and I can't help but notice she stares a little longer than one would expect. Can't say that bothers me. But that night isn't so good at all when I learn the thing that sucks most about having a female roommate like Josie. She's going on a date. Chapter 9. I try to leave before she does. I don't want to know what she's wearing. I don't want to know how she does her hair. I don't even want to know where she's going. Until she tells me. My hand is on the doorknob, ready to hightail it out of the apartment since I can't be the pathetic ass who's home when his fuck-hot roommate heads out on a date. Josie calls out to me from the hallway. Hey! Yeah? She walks into the living room. I'm going to Bar Boisterous in the 50s. I narrow my eyes. Okay, why are you telling me? So you'll know where my last known location is. Annoyance threads through me. Please don't tell me you're going out with someone you think is going to dismember you. She shudders and wags spooky fingers. Yes, I'll have him send my head to you in a box. Not funny. What if he puts a bow on top, like a gift? She steps closer and adopts a Vincent Price narrator style. He's going to cut me up in tiny pieces and feed me to the wolverines. Seriously, not funny. Are you really worried about this guy? I ask, not giving in to her attempt at humor. Though, in all other circumstances, Josie wins major points for being not just a humor consumer, but a humor producer. And that's rare. Humor producers are diamonds. Just not this second. She parks her hands on her hips. She wears a white top with a scoop neck and a pair of slim jeans. Her date doesn't deserve her. I don't know who he is, what he does, or a thing about him, but I don't need to. He doesn't fucking deserve this amazing, humor-producing, big-hearted, glorious-chested, kitchen-talented woman. You asked a ridiculous question, Chase. Sternly, I say, you're the one who wanted to tell me your last known location. I'm just being cautious, not paranoid. I relent. Sorry. But seriously, I have a favor to ask. There's no toying in her tone. Of course, ask me anything. And I'll do it. Her voice is innocent, hopeful even, as she asks, Can I call you if anything comes up? Like what? I don't know, she says, fidgeting with a heart charm on her silver bracelet. Just anything, I guess. I saw Henry once over the summer, and we had a nice time. Then he had to leave town for an assignment. I don't know much about him, and usually my friend Lily, who runs the flower shop down the street from me, is my backup. But she's out with her boyfriend Rob tonight, so if anything happens, can you be my bat signal? When she puts it like that, how can I harbor a ball of frustration over her dating? I might think she's a babe, but first and foremost, she's my friend. One of my best friends. I stride across the hardwood floor, drape an arm around her, and pull her in close to reassure her. Except, tactical air. I draw a deep inhale of her hair. That ball of frustration doesn't unwind. It coils because he'll smell her tonight. He'll know her cherry scent. My fists clench. My chest pinches. My jaw tightens. But then, I'm just being territorial, I tell myself. I'm a lion protecting my pride. This isn't personal. This isn't a man looking out for his woman. This is just elemental. It's basic male-female pack mentality, king of the jungle shit. It's a guy looking out for a girl he cares about. My job is to be her wingman on alert, to keep her safe. You know I will, Josie baby, I say in her ear. Baby? What the fuck? I don't use terms of endearment. I don't utter sweet little nothings. Thank you, she says as we separate. It's just this whole online dating thing is... She draws a deep breath. It's fraught with challenges. I went out with someone a few months ago and... Well, let's just say it didn't work out. Relationships have a way of doing that. She nods and quirks up her lips. But I'm glad to have you to lean on. I tilt like the Tower of Pisa. Lean on me. She nudges her shoulder against mine, and my heart beats faster, like way speedier than the normal resting heart rate. That's odd, but I tell myself the quickened pace comes from a simpler place, from the human desire to be needed. The best gal I know needs me to be her reliable, steady guy. That's what I'll be for her. I won't be the dude who thinks about her chest, or her legs, or her intoxicating hair. Hell, I already know that kicking a friendship up a notch can fuck up all sorts of shit. It can ruin everything, including the heart. When Josie steps away from me, the beating in my chest returns to normal. I point at her. For you, I make house calls. The doctor is always in. She thanks me again, and I leave to meet my buddies at Joe's Sticks, a pool hall in the East 50s. Max, Spencer, Nick, and Wyatt are at a table, racking up. Max claps me on the back when I arrive. How's life on a sitcom working out for you? Har, har, har. He thrusts a beer at me. Three's Company yet? I take the bottle. Except there's only two of us. His dark eyes stare me down. I can count. I can also speculate. And that little number, two, tells me it'll be even harder for you, he says, shaking his head as he hands me a pool cue. You're on my team, and I can't wait to say I told you so. That's what I love about you, the endless well of support. Always, he says with a wink. He nods at the table. You go first. I need my ringer. I say hello to the other guys and then line up my shot. I'm good at pool. It's the focus, the concentration, the same skill set as sewing up a forehead. Yes, I have excellent hand-eye coordination, and it helps me kill it at the pool table. Max is a beast, too. So we're like the 1-2 Summers Brothers punch. I line up and aim. I send the white ball straight into the purple ball, which races over the felt and rattles neatly into the corner pocket. Nice one, Wyatt says from the corner of the table. Earlier, he texted me that his wife, Natalie, would be busy tonight doing wedding prep with Spencer's wife, Charlotte. Yes, wedding prep. Wyatt and Natalie are already married, but they're getting married again. They tied the knot in Vegas a little while ago, but they're having a ceremony here in a few weeks for friends and family. As I walk around the table looking for the next shot, Wyatt says, "How's life with my little sister?" "Great," I say, "because it is." "What's she up to tonight?" I pause for a second, unsure if I should say what she's doing. "She's out." Spencer parks his hands around his mouth like a megaphone. "Code word for date." Nick straightens his spine and arches a brow at Spencer. "Seriously, my sister does not date." Spencer smacks his back. "Yep, just like my sister didn't date," he says, giving him a sharp, "I caught you" stare, since Nick's engaged to Spencer's sister, Harper. Nick holds up his hands. "Fine, fine." Spencer pokes Nick with the cue. "Get used to it, buddy. Get used to your sister dating. I had to get used to it with you, of all people." I sink my shot, then miss the next one. When Nick takes his turn, Wyatt calls out to me. "Who's the lucky guy tonight, and when do we need to beat him up?" I shrug. "Don't know." He stares sharply at me. "You don't know? Dude, I'm not her keeper." "I know, shithead, but you need to look out for her." Wyatt points his beer bottle at me. "Yeah, because men are pigs," Max says, weighing in. We all hold up our beers at that statement. Later, Wyatt pulls me aside. "Seriously, man, look out for Josie. She dated some guy last spring who really hurt her." Like a chemical reaction, that searing jealousy from earlier transforms into an entirely new substance. the wish to hurt this guy. Who's this ass fuck? The guy she's out with tonight? Henry? Wyatt shakes his head and blows out a long stream of air. Not Henry. I don't have all the details. She told Natalie, but basically this guy she met online totally wooed her, and when they met in person, it was clear all he wanted was... I clench my teeth. Fuck, I hate douches. Yeah, me too. What happened? He blew her off after he got what he wanted. Classic dick move. Classic, Wyatt agrees. I swear, if she had told me who he was, I'd probably have killed him, and it's not even like he committed the worst dating sin ever. But he hurt my sister. Ergo, you want to kill him, I supply. I hate people who hurt my sister. I need you to watch out for her, just like I'd do for Mia if you needed me to. My sister Mia's on the West Coast, working her butt off to build up her company, and she's doing great as far as I can tell from her regular texts and emails. You're in Josie's space now, man. You're going to know better than anyone else what's going on. Be her fucking online dating profile decoder. I hold up a fist for knocking. Count on it. This role now? This is what matters. It's a jungle out there, and if there's anything I can do to help Josie Hammer navigate her way through it, I will. I can sniff out a douchebag. I can protect her from the fuckers of the world. When she calls me a little later, I've got my first assignment. Dr. Decoder at your service, I joke, stepping away from my buds. He's choking, Josie says. Loud music plays in the background, and she sounds rattled and on her way to panicked. I go into instant ER mode. What's going on? My date, Henry, he's choking and can barely talk, and he's got an EpiPen in his hand, but he's struggling to use it. Do I just stab it in his thigh? Her voice is strained, understandably, jammed with the nerves I've heard countless times from others in her situation. Yes, I say, all business, as I march out of the noisy pool hall. I'll text Wyatt later and let him know where I went. It's easy. Jab it in his thigh, click it, and I'll be there in 5 minutes. Stay on the phone with me, she says, her voice shaky. Absolutely. I hail a cab and zip over a few blocks to Bar Boisterous, keeping her calm the whole way as her date starts to breathe again. Once inside, I quickly find Josie with a bearded hipster dude and take over for her. I help him out of the bar, and we take him to the nearest emergency room. Even though it's a busy Saturday night, they see him stat, and it's not just because he has a personal escort with an MD. It's because Josie's date came this close to having one hell of a bad ending to his night. The guy's allergic to peanuts, and there were trace amounts in the pesto sauce in the sandwich he ordered at Bar Boisterous. 2 hours later, we leave Henry safe and sound with the doctors and nurses. They'll take care of him now and make sure he's doing fine. The hospital doors close behind us, and I turn my attention once more to Josie. Chapter 10. From the pages of Josie's recipe book. Waffles with strawberries may lead to unexpected moments. Ingredients. Strawberries, quartered. Eggs, flour, milk, butter, melted, white sugar, baking powder, kosher salt, vanilla extract. Directions. 1. Preheat your waffle maker according to its instruction manual. Come on, you know you have the manual. This is the first time you're making waffles from scratch. Admit it. 2. While it is heating, prepare your butter. Add 1 cup of strawberries to your blender. Puree until smooth. Don't get distracted by words and recipes like smooth, which is how you picture Chase's chest. 3. Add the eggs, butter, milk, and vanilla extract to the strawberries and blend until smooth. Add half the flour, sugar, salt, and baking powder, and do the same. Add the remaining flour mixture and blend until well mixed. Stir in the remaining strawberries. Funny thing, strawberries remind me of Chase's favorite dessert, the yummy strawberry shortcake cupcakes I make for the Sunshine Bakery. I should really make him some. I like the way his hazel eyes light up when he eats them, as if they're the best thing he's ever tasted. 4. When your waffle maker is preheated, spray with cooking spray and begin making your waffles. Pour the batter into one corner and smooth into the other corners with a spatula. Cook. Remove waffles from waffle maker and set aside. Repeat until all waffles are made. Or until you decide to go out for waffles at one of the many amazing establishments in Manhattan that make way tastier waffles than even a baker can make. Bonus, no cleanup or storage of a ridiculously heavy object. Besides, having waffles with Chase is more proof of how well we fit as roomies, especially since I want to talk to him about that crazy date that just ended. Chapter 11. Out on the street, Josie breathes a huge sigh of relief, then plants her hands on my shoulders. I can't thank you enough. A cab squeals by, on a hunt for a fare at the end of the block. I wave away her thank you. Don't even think twice about it. I barely did a thing. She squeezes my shoulders harder, her eyes pinned on me. No, you did everything. You're the one who worked the EpiPen. You hardly even needed me. She shakes her head. You're wrong. I totally needed you. Being able to call you, having you join me, taking him to the hospital. Chase, she says, taking a beat. That was everything. It wasn't everything, not even close, but I can't deny that my heart fucking races from the compliment. I wish I didn't like it so much. She tilts her head. I'm starving. Want to go to Wendy's Diner and order waffles? On me. My growling stomach is the answer. Waffles on you is my dream meal. She nudges me and shoots me a smile as we walk along the sidewalk. King of double entendres. And I wear the title with pride, I say, trying my best to think about waffles, not eating them off Josie, though I bet that's the absolute best way to eat waffles. Under the bright fluorescent lights at Wendy's Diner around the corner, curiosity gets the better of this cat. After the waitress brings water and coffee and takes our order, I stroke my chin as if I've got a beard. Beards, glasses, skinny jeans. She frowns in confusion. Is that your grocery list? No, but is it yours? Would I have received an aardvark text warning me to stay away tonight? Are you into hipsters? I nod in the general uptown direction of the hospital. I've never thought about who she might be into before. It hasn't been a big part of our lexicon. The fact is, I'm only vaguely aware of a few dates and boyfriends she's had in the past. I am well aware, though, that of all the things I might be, a hipster is absolutely not one of them. I'm not sure why my muscles tense as I wait for her answer, or why I hope she doesn't have a big thing for hipsters. She laughs and takes a drink of her water. She shrugs happily. I don't really have a type. My shoulders relax. You just like all dudes? She rolls her eyes. No, obviously I don't like everyone, but I don't have a physical type per se. Sure, handsome is nice, but it's not a prerequisite that he has tats or not, or a beard or not, or burly muscles or not, or red hair or not, as examples. I drag a hand through my hair, unable to resist flirting with her, even now. Light brown hair. That'd do the trick nicely, though. She stretches a hand across the formica table and rubs my hair. Yes, and warm hazel eyes, and a nice square jaw, and strong arms, and a flat belly, she says, letting go, and my eyes widen at the litany of compliments while my body enjoys the got-her-to-cop-a-feel moment. Perhaps you should write my plenty of fish profile. I pretend to tap on a keyboard. Type, ridiculously handsome, chiseled jaw, eyes that melt a woman, brilliant wit, and as a bonus, great in bed. She laughs. Well, now that you mention the bonus features, I point at myself. Just being honest and laying out all the key features of this type of car. I appreciate your frankness about the vehicles on the lot, Chase, she says, deadpan. Then she adds, and yes, if I do have a type, ideally he's smart, funny, kind to animals, and treats women well. Also, he should be able to handle peanuts, right? Incidentally, I happen to love them. She laughs. Peanut aficionado is optional. Walnut lover is better, though. If he loves pecans, then we're talking the real deal. So mixed nuts it is. Duly noted. I mind making a check mark. Plus, bonus points for not being a liar, she says, taking her time on that last one as a waitress strides by, balancing 3 plates of scrambled eggs and bacon. I grab my coffee and take a thirsty gulp. When I set it down, I ask, "So what's the story there? Wyatt mentioned some guy you dated." She sighs, looks at the table, then back up. "It's stupid." I slide my hand across the table and rest it on top of hers. "It's not stupid." She shakes her head. "It's just, you put yourself out there and someone isn't who he seems. Do you know what I mean?"
"Do I ever?"
"Yes. And this guy, Damien, was like that. I met him on an online site and we just really hit it off. We connected on everything. Same sense of humor, same love of books. He even liked Scrabble."
A rocket-fueled blast of jealousy rolls through me. "That's our thing." I grit my teeth as she talks.
"We had the best time chatting online. We'd chat until the wee hours of the morning about anything and everything. He changed his status to exploring a new relationship. And we went out a couple of times. They were all these seemingly perfect, idyllic dates," she says, "and I hate Damien already with a bone-deep loathing. We went to a piano bar, and even when he heard me sing under my breath, he didn't make fun of me." She flashes a weary smile. "And you know what an awful singer I am."
"Just mouth the words," I whisper.
Her smile grows bigger. "He doesn't know about that. You're the only one privy to that horror story." During one of our college breaks at her house, while the two of us were hanging out in the living room, stretched out on her parents' couch, her feet slung over my thighs, I'd asked her for her most embarrassing moment. "Hands down, second grade, music class." My ears perked.
"Tell me."
"Each student had to sing Scotland's Burning in front of the group, and when it was my turn, I walked into the middle of the circle, opened my mouth, and sang, 'Scotland's burning, look out, look out.' And I was sure I sounded fine, until the teacher covered her ears."
"Ouch."
"The real ouch was when the music teacher said, 'Just mouth the words, child, just mouth the words.'"
"And that was the end of your Broadway dreams."
She imitated squashing a bug with her hand, and then she sang a line from the song. She was woefully off-key, and I joined in, committing equal musical crimes with my terrible voice. "Don't tell my brothers."
"It's our secret," I'd said. "And it has been, ever since."
"Anyway," she says, returning to the story of Damien, "the next time he took me to a book signing. Jojo Moyes was in town, and he knew I loved her work, so we went to an open book where I met her and had her sign Me Before You." My hatred for him intensifies. Josie loves that book, and I just know that somehow this douche nozzle used that information to take advantage of her.
"You told me all about it last year, how torn up you were over the ending, how it made you think about so many things."
She nods, a small smile playing on her lips.
"It did. I'm not saying I agree with the choices made, but that book just touched me," she says, patting her heart.
Then she moves her hand to her head, tapping her temple. "And it made me think.
I liked hearing your reaction when you wrote to me about it."
"And I liked sharing that with you," she says, then takes a beat. "And I told him too, how it made me think, how it made me feel."
She heaves a sigh.
"So he took me to the signing. He was trying to be everything he thought I wanted, so he could get what he wanted."
She swallows, and yep, I know where this story is going. And it's not because Wyatt gave me the spoiler. It's etched in her eyes and colors her voice, and I wish I could erase any hurt she's ever been through.
A few more dates, a few more kisses, a few more times rolling out the Josie Hammer red carpet.
She glances away momentarily, then she shakes her head and looks at me.
"Then we slept together.
And even though I knew that was coming, I can't control the green-eyed monster that thrashes in my belly, fighting to break free. I can, however, control what I do about it."
"And?" I ask, keeping my tone even.
"It was good," she says, matter-of-factly, and the creature rattles the bars, kicking and screaming, "but I don't give in."
"And he didn't call the next day?"
A deep breath, a sheen over her eyes.
"I waited. Stupidly." Her voice is feather-thin. "Like my phone was an extension of my hand. I even texted him the next evening, like a foolish girl. 'Hey,' she says, adopting a too cheery tone. 'Hope you had a great day. I know I did, thinking of you.'"
My stomach churns with anger.
with righteous rage. Did he ever write back? She nods. Once, that night, he said, day was great. The dude couldn't even say, my day was great. And is that all you ever heard from him? Yes, he changed his status to available and looking the next morning, and I never heard from him again. He's one of the biggest wastes of space on the planet, I say as I squeeze her hand. He doesn't deserve you, and he's a complete ass for leading you on. If he walked through the door right now, I search the table and grab an orange bottle. I brandish it like a weapon. I'd douse his eyes with Tabasco. She smiles. But that'd be a waste of good Tabasco. I grab the pepper shaker. Line up a dozen pepper shakers outside the door and lurk in the corner till he tripped on them, bonking his skull in the process. Her smile turns to a full-blown grin. Now you're tempting me. I hold a finger in the air. Wait, I've got it. Record myself singing Scotland's Burning and hack his phone so it plays repeatedly, driving him insane with my horrible singing voice. She laughs so loudly she snorts. It's fucking adorable and rewarding at the same time. If we really want to torture him, we'd make it a duet, she says, her green eyes twinkling with the prospect of an epic prank. I hold up my hand for a high five. She slaps my palm, then weaves her fingers through mine. I squeeze back, then lightly drag my fingertips over the soft skin of her hand. Her eyes flicker with something else now, a different type of excitement, one I haven't seen from her before, but one I find I want more of. The look vanishes too quickly when the waitress arrives. Waffles for two, she says in her thick Long Island accent, snapping her gum as she serves the plates. We thank her, and when the waitress leaves, Josie picks up her fork. Seriously, though, what can you do? Everyone gets Damien'd sooner or later. It's not like something so terrible happened to me. It just hurt, but I'm over it. I wanted you to know, though, since you asked. Hey, don't discount it because it happens to others. A stomach ache from the flu might not be as bad as appendicitis, but both can hurt. She smiles. That's true. I'm just sorry I wasn't here to kick his ass. I dig into my waffles. Also, this needs to be said. But, Damien, wasn't that...